This is the Simon Dell Show, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
Welcome to the Simon Dell Show, and this is one of our masterclass shows, the second masterclass show. And once again, we welcome back Simon Bell.
Hey, great to be here.
Let's hope everyone is not getting confused as to which one is Bell and which one is Dell. Maybe what we ought to do is put a photo of each other up next to each other. So we one with a B and one
definitely.
With a D.
Definitely. The amount of conversations I have with people about it. I'm doing the Simon Dell podcast tomorrow. They're like, the Simon what?
Oh dear. And the nicknames we must have got called.
I can imagine. Yes.
I'm just wondering whose would have been worse. Your
Belly probably. Was the prime. That was probably much as bad as it got, I think.
Probably, yeah. Yeah. I would have thought so. Yeah. Just a quick recap on what we did in Masterclass 1. So we talked about business targets and about the importance of setting those. We talked about collecting data from your business, about how you can use all those data points to help put your plans and your objectives together, and also about allocating a budget towards marketing and advertising. Now, today we're going to touch on two things. We're going to talk about customer lifetime value, or CLV, if we want to be cool and trendy. And we're also going to talk about conversion rates. So the first thing I'm going to discuss is exactly what a customer lifetime value is. And in a real nutshell, it's simple as it's the value that a customer brings to your business in the lifetime of them dealing with your business. Anything else that you want to add to that, Simon, that might help? Or
probably more of a question, Simon, for you is, you know, as for those that listened to the last masterclass, I'm not the marketing guru that Simon Dell is, but a question that I get asked and a question that I suppose I've had as well, would you include the value of referrals within that lifetime value of the customer, or was it just the direct spend?
To me, it's just direct spend.
Right, because I've had different feedback, and that's why I thought I'd get your
I don't think there's any real right or wrong, and I'll explain the purpose of understanding this number, and there's two main reasons for understanding this number. Number one is it helps you allocate money towards capturing a new customer. So if your average customer lifetime value is that they spend $1,000 with you every year and they stay with you for 3 years, then we know that your customer lifetime value, the average customer lifetime value, is $3,000. That would mean that in order to capture them, you would want to allocate a percentage of that to capture them. And let's say, like we discussed, what did we discuss last time as a percentage of your marketing budget? 5%, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so.
But let's say you want to be a bit aggressive and you want to go, you know what, we want to get more customers quickly, we're going to spend 10%. So 10% of $3,000 is $300. So in that way, you're going, right, well, I'm going to allocate $300 to capturing a client that's potentially worth $3,000 to me over their entire lifetime. If you don't understand what they're worth to you over the lifetime, and let's say they're a $1,000 a year client, they could theoretically be spending that $1,000 over 12 months, which would be, let's call it $80, because I'm not going to be able to do the complicated maths in my head. So if I said to you, Simon, would you spend $300 to capture a client that was going to spend $80 with you in their first month? What would you say to that?
$80 in their first month.
Hmm.
Long, over a 12-month period of time, probably not ideal.
No. But can you see that if you then say to them, well, they're going to be with me for 3 years and they're going to contribute this amount to the business.
Totally.
That theoretically then $300 for a $3,000 return totally seems valid. Yeah. So this is where I tried to get to people to kind of understand that if they overinvest at the start and they're delivering the service levels ongoing and they're going to be with them for 3 years, et cetera, that $300 doesn't seem quite as scary.
That's correct. Yeah.
I mean, it is still going to be scary saying to someone to spend $300 and then your first invoice to them is $80. seems nuts.
Yeah, totally.
But that's why I try to say to people, trying to get an understanding of what people are worth to you in their lifetime. Mm. It kind of gives you, I think, a bigger picture of where you're trying to get to as a business. And the other thing I like to think is if I said to you, if you want to grow your business by $1 million in the next 3 years, and each customer contributes $3,000 to that, I should have picked a number that was easier to divide.
You've lost me.
All right. Let's say each customer contributes $2,000 to the business over 3 years, and you want to grow $1 million in revenue over the next 3 years, then you're going to need how many customers, Simon?
I didn't actually know you were going to ask me that question. I was thinking in a completely different realm about what I was going to say next, and you've thrown me under a bus. I love it.
Basically, you need 500 customers.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Now, obviously, I've really simplified the maths because not all clients sort of arrive on day one or anything like that. But
no,
that's just to kind of get your head into the space of understanding. When someone walks through the door, they have a theoretical value attached to them.
Yes.
And I said it to one customer. I said, imagine that someone has written that value on their forehead and a prospect walks through that door and they're going to be worth $3,000 to you. How do you treat that person when they've got the numbers $3,000 written on their forehead?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to say the same thing when we did some sales training with companies in regards to entering the phone. You know, you work at the lifetime value of a client, and especially with trades-based businesses, and I'm sure you've experienced this, where they're like, "How you going?" Or this is John. You know, when you actually work with John and you explain to John how much a lifetime value of a client might be when it comes to whether plumbing or electrical or whatever it might be, hopefully that stirs an interest to answer their phone a little bit differently, a little bit more effectively from the process. What I was thinking about before I was...
before you were put on the spot.
Before I was put on the spot.
With some very basic maths,
that's,
I might
so
add.
So that's podcast 101. So you remain present regardless of what's being said there, right? There. What I was thinking about there is what came up for me when you were talking about the $300 for $80 return immediates was just you can just see the importance there to have someone in your corner that works out the numbers quite effectively, like whether it's a bookkeeper or your accountant, so you can actually start to budget from a cash flow perspective.
Absolutely, yeah.
The marketing budget to get you through. Because I know I've worked with businesses or business owners that, you know, when you're talking math like that, it's very confronting, and they've got to deal with the reality of their cash flow straight up. So that's where I was thinking. I was trying to work out how to work that into the conversation.
No, but you know, you're spot on. A lot of people don't get the maths. They get what they're good at in business, but they don't get the maths. And spending $300 for an $80 return in that first month is completely alien to them. And it might be impossible for them, as you said, with the cash flow issues, they might not have that money to try and capture new clients.
Yeah.
Which is where sometimes you go, right, well, perhaps it's worth, if we want to see fast growth, that's where you've got to start looking at things like investment or, raising capital and all those kind of things. So, it's a really good point that a lot of people don't get the maths. Mm. And having a consultant or
a good bookkeeper or a good accountant should be doing this with your cash flow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cash flow forecasting. Yeah,
absolutely. And the other thing that I just wanted to discuss with this is sometimes people use customer lifetime value. I find who do I know that people like mortgage brokers and insurance companies tend to use customer lifetime value a fair bit because with them, that tend to be, once they get a client on, they're with them for quite a while.
Mm.
Especially insurance company, a lot of people sort of auto-renew every year, and they are very aware of how long people stay with insurance companies.
Yeah.
Or go chasing a new policy and, you know.
Just the inconvenience of finding a new provider.
Absolutely. And if you get sent an email saying your policy is going up by 3%, you just shrug your shoulders and go, whatever, it's 3%. Yep. If you get one that says it's going up by 10%, that's when you go, right, well, perhaps I better have a look around.
And that's an interesting point there in regards to, you know, business owners that are listening to this that aren't insurance brokers and finance brokers, about how you can build yourself into your clients' lives such that it's an auto response, such that it's an auto, you know, your version of an auto renew there. There's that much value that people wouldn't, you know, even consider going with someone else.
And that sort of leads me on to the other point, which is whether you look at customer lifetime value or the alternative, which is average spend. So sometimes I use average spend or average spend per head when we talk about businesses that are much more transactional based. And a good example would be a restaurant. Mm. It's very hard for you to understand as a restaurant the customer lifetime value because you perhaps don't know when people are coming back. You don't know that they're eating with you, you know, once a week or once every 6 months or, you know, 10 times in the next 3 years. That's hard, if not impossible, to track. I'm not saying it's not, you could track it, but it may not be a good use of your time. What is more useful is to understand the average spend on a particular, let's say, on a particular evening where you know that you've got 40 covers, and you know that everybody who's going to be sat down that evening is going to be spending $50 per head. Understanding that number to me is really important because there's a huge opportunity for you to go, right, well, people are spending $50 a head. How do we get that up to $55? And the interesting thing is that generally doesn't involve any marketing. You've already got people coming into your business. You've already got, you know, 40 covers that evening. You don't have to get any more. You don't have to spend any more.
No.
It's more going back to those sales techniques that you've just mentioned about, in one sense, ingraining yourself in the customer's business more. But here it's about trying to add more value so that they spend more money.
Yeah, that's restaurants are a really good example of that. I'm sure that people listening that have been to a great restaurant and had a great waiter or waitress as opposed to an ordinary one. And, you know, I always seem to spend a lot more money with a good one. Purely because, you know, they're making the recommendations. They're involved in the customer experience. They're not just relying on the food in this example to carry the experience through. It's the entire, you know, process from the time they walk you from the front door to be seated and so on and so forth. And I think that's where people, you know, if you're looking at this as a business owner or entrepreneur, that customer experience is essential.
And that boils that, and that sort of sums up the customer lifetime value and average spend for me, is to say sales experience, those two things can grow those numbers without you needing any more bums on seats, without you needing any more people to be inquiring. You can grow your business and you can grow it substantially by just improving that number.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And there's lots and lots of ways that you can do that, and we'll come across those in sort of later masterclasses. But I love your point about saying get yourself more ingrained in people's businesses, because then instead of them being with you for 3 years, they're with you for 4 years.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's a valuable exercise. I've done it, I don't know how many times I've done this with clients, but mapped out the customer experience. I forget who I originally saw someone do this at the front of the room. He called it the cup of coffee experience. And he kind of used the analogy of how much you could buy a cup of coffee for or have a cup of coffee for.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're making an instant cup of coffee of Nescafe Blend 43, or you were drinking a latte in Venice somewhere.
Yeah,
where you're paying 5 cents versus, you know, 14 euro. And all that ultimately changes there is the experience of the customer. And it's such a simple exercise when you actually sit down when you sit down and you think about step by step the customer experience and being able to design that. You know, like you've done the hard work, you've got them in the door, you've got them to inquire. Let's make sure their experience is not only consistent with the brand, but it exceeds expectations.
I've got a good example of a blog I wrote once where I said language and product can be the difference between an average spend of $20 a head and $30 a head. If I said to you, I was going to sell you a packet of chips. Now I'm going to use chips in the French fry sense here.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so a packet of chips for $3.
Yep.
You go, all right, that sounds great. Well, then I'm going to try and sell you is a packet of hot chips for $4.
Mm.
or I'm going to sell you a packet of hand-cut hot chips for $5, or I'm going to try and sell you a packet of hand-cut hot chips with barbecued sauce and seasoning for $6.
Yeah.
Those are markedly different prospects from the final one, from the hot chip, from chips. But the price differential in that is massive.
Yeah.
You're doubling your price in that process.
And the margin increases dramatically.
Now, the difference between producing chips and hand-cut hot chips with barbecued sauce and seasoning might actually be the same thing.
Hmm.
They could have come out the same packet, or it could have been taken you just as long to produce. But the margin and the average spend, the customer lifetime value, and that those are all things that are increasing without you actually necessarily taking much more time or, you know, increasing your costs to produce. It's little things like that that I think people can go back, whether you're running a restaurant or you're an accountant or you're a, you know, manufacturer, whatever, where can you add those little tweaks to increase those average spends and to increase those customer lifetime values?
Yeah, definitely. And it almost sounds like I think people fall into the trap that it's that simple that people don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's that simple to go back and actually design that customer experience, design the product offering in a way that has it be, it has the multiple levels there and, you know, really attend to that product delivery aspect that people just, you know, can almost take it for granted, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want people to, so that the task from today for that, I just want people to, you know, whatever business you're running, I want you to go back and work out that customer lifetime value. And if you do nothing else, write it down on a piece of paper, A4 paper, the value of that, and have that somewhere that you can see that every day. So when the phone rings or someone walks in the door or whatever, you look at them with that value. Now, you know, don't let your eyes glaze over like you're actually looking at
Put it in the background. Once you've worked it out, put it in the background.
don't say something. Can you hold up this piece of paper for
me? That's right.
Because that would kind of be weird.
Be creepy.
But have a perception of what they're worth, because if it does nothing else, it will suddenly make you go, wow, I need to really look after these people. I need to, you know, deliver that experience that's worthy of what they could potentially be about to spend with me.
Yeah.
The second thing I want to discuss, and I'm just going to use your example we discussed before we started, was conversion rate. I want to get an example because you talked about that creating some funnels and things like that. When I talk about a conversion rate, I talk about the number of prospects or the number of inquiries that a business gets versus the number of them that turn into actual clients.
Mm.
Does that make sense to you? Is that how you would see it?
Yeah, 100%. Knowing the conversion rate at each stage of the funnel is essential, because it ties in perfectly with your marketing spend. You know, an example that we just chatted about offline, for those that obviously weren't there, was... So for the National College of Business, our acquisition or lead, you know, client acquisition was through events, through seminars, which is fairly standard for the coaching kind of space. And so we had a funnel or a process which involved a landing page, people opting in to receive 2 free tickets to an event. Then they would attend an event, make sure the event was jam-packed full of great content and great stuff. Within the offer or the opportunity to catch up with one of our business managers to go through a tailored strategy, in which case they'd be presented a program. So it's a fairly standard kind of event sales process. Now, each one of those stages we tracked the conversion rate. So we actually ran, this is not too far back. This is going back in probably only 4 years ago. We actually ran a direct mail campaign to PO boxes. And we had a landing page, clarityforgrowth.com.au. And you know, we would measure the amount of, and it was very tangible, see, because we could obviously there's a per piece cost to be delivered and printed. Then we would track the number of, you know, flyers distributed, and we did split tests. You'd be proud of me, Simon. We did split tests. So we split test different videos on the landing pages, one with a video, one without. And anyway, long story short, we would track that to event registration. Now, one of the major challenges with a free event is attendance, people committing to, and there's no skin in the game. So, you know, making sure that we've got conversion from, in this case, and direct mail wasn't the only thing that we did, but from direct mail to conversion, attendance to opt-in for a strategy session, and then strategy session to onboarding as a client. And I can't remember the specifics of the flyers to registration.
Yeah.
But we targeted for 75% attendance from registration.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And we
so if 100 people registered, you'd be expecting 75% of them there.
Correct. Yeah. So
that's I've got to say that I think that's high for a free event.
Yeah. Well, I'm not
disputing. I'm not saying you didn't get that.
Liar. Well, having said that, we did have a event manager on staff whose job it was just purely to fill events.
Gotcha.
Right. So it's not just as we said in the previous podcast, you know, that's a marketing expense of $55,000 a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And someone whose job it was purely just to have events. So hence why the KPIs were set high, because there was, you know, we were investing over $1,000 a week in wages alone to fill events. Yeah. So, but then was that, and then it was my job to make sure that 75 to 80%, I set myself a game of 75% of the people that attended, or businesses, I should say, because you know, people turn up with couples or business partners, or of businesses that attended to opt in for a strategy session. So that would measure my effectiveness of the actual event itself. And then it was up to our business managers to convert somewhere between 35, which is their, we called it our bare ass minimums. Yeah, right. BAM, 35 minimums. Yeah, BAM, 35 to 40%. Work backwards. And the marketing spend, which is what you're alluding to before, the marketing spend was a no-brainer, because once we had the numbers and the, excuse me, and the numbers were proven, it was literally, you know, like going to an ATM and saying, or going to a bank and saying, we're going to invest, you know, $5,000 into marketing, because we know we're going to get an X amount of percent return. And the only reason we had that confidence in upping the ante with our marketing spend is because we tracked our conversion rates rigorously.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And it would be great if all businesses could do that. And I think just a couple of things to take out of that. I think that's 70, I just want to reiterate that 75% from a inquiry or booking to actually attendance, that's brilliant. I mean, I would, for a free event, if people are out there, if business owners are thinking, you know what, let's put a free event on, let's invite some people and come along. I think that's a great eye-opening number. And the reason I say that is because if they invite 100 people to an event and they expect 100 people to arrive, they are generally smoking crack.
Yeah.
Because in my years, I don't think I have ever seen a free event where, unless it's alcohol and lots of alcohol and students, then you get 100% if it's a free event, right? Otherwise, if it's business people, if it's business owners or anybody in business, there is no chance on this planet you're going to do a free event. I invite 100 people and get 100 people to turn up.
No.
My gut feeling is if you get 25% to turn up, that's a good job.
I can give you some rough numbers. We had mid to late 40s prior to putting Brendan on, who was our events manager. So it was, so mid 40s attendance before that was just a simple connection call or a text message or an email confirmation. But to have him on and then have him take it from 45% to, you know, to consistently 70 to 75% attendance, it's a no-brainer for me. It was a no-brainer. So it was worth the investment of his wage and his training.
And I think, again, when people think about that, you go, right, well, I'm going to run an event with, I'm going to invite 100 people, 25 turn up. And if you're happy with 25, then fantastic.
100%.
If you can sit there and go, if I'm going to do these on a regular basis and I know that 25 turning up is good, but 50 turning up would lead me to many more clients, and those many more clients would be worth a lot more than $1,000 a week, then you've got to sit down and do your sums and go, all right, well, do I hire someone who is a specific event manager? And their job is to get me from 25% to 50% to 75%.
That's right.
Because the return on investment could be obvious. And, yeah. and it doesn't take necessarily a strong numbers person to work that out. So I think that's a really interesting pitch to get people up to 75. My mind is still blown by 75%. Mm. I'm just like, I just used to say to people, you know, charge an amount, but a low amount, because that gets them to, you know, feel that they've got some, what's the word I'm looking for?
Skin in the game.
Yeah,
100%. And look, there's a lot of, that was a full-time role, you know, like I want people to get that as well. I want people to get that it wasn't just the receptionist or the secretary or someone in the background, you know, making confirmation calls. That wasn't the role. This role was specifically and highly trained in filling events. So, overcoming objections. I mean, there's a lot of training that went into that, but look, that's hopefully a good demonstration, a good example of what is possible if you're committed to your marketing funnel and your sales process.
Absolutely. I think it's a fantastic example. On the other end of the spectrum, one of the things I see a lot of is e-commerce conversion rate. And we'll talk about that later on when we sort of talk about websites and digital, but it's amazing. I deal with a client at the moment that has, we track their online sales versus their online sales 2 years ago. And the entire difference in their business, I say the entire difference, a large part of the difference of their revenue at the moment is down to the change of the e-commerce conversion rate. So a couple of years ago, they might be chugging along at a 4 to 5% conversion rate. So for every 100 people coming to the website, 4 to 5 of them are buying. And again, just to understand, I consider a 5% conversion rate to any e-commerce site is a good result.
Right.
You're not going to be getting 75% conversion rate on it.
No.
Well, you might do in some very strange e-commerce sites, but generally you're looking at that sort of 5% as being as a good target. And the challenges they're having at the moment is their e-commerce rate is around about that 2.5%, 3%. So they're actually getting the same amount of traffic to the site, but they are not getting the conversions that they were getting 2 years ago. And there's various reasons for that. There's a bit of a shift in the demographic in terms of how people are using the websites and all those kind of things. But it's really important for people to understand that, because without them understanding that conversion rate, they could be chasing off rabbits down holes, thinking something's wrong with the business, thinking something's wrong with their products, so all these kind of things, when it comes back to that conversion rate. So they need to, now we've narrowed that down with them, we can fix things at a certain level. We can fix the user experience, or, you know, increase the speed of checkout, or, you know, encourage people to buy more, those kind of things. But
yeah,
it's important whether you're doing a free event or whether you're an e-commerce platform to really understand that conversion rate.
Yeah. And I think, it's important for people listening, if they've never done it, have a look at why you've never done it. And for most part, you know, it can seem a bit convoluted, a bit in depth for some people. And I think fundamentally people ask the question as to whether or not it's valuable to check the conversion, or to track at such a, you know, an in-depth level, the conversion rates of their marketing, you know, efforts. Mm. But fundamentally, guys, it really is about giving you that confidence in your spend then. And I can assure you, both I can speak firsthand and as well as working with clients, it's an exciting experience when you know your process and your conversion rate of your process, because then investing, like I said before, investing the money in your marketing, it's like a license to print money fundamentally, because you've done it. It's now just a matter of giving me more money to spend it. And look, there is obviously a ratio there that it'll kind of cap out, so to speak. But fundamentally be like, well, how much more can we pump into this marketing campaign because we know it's converting?
the amount of confidence that you get knowing those numbers
100%
changes your outlook on growing the business and everything. So, the last thing I just wanted to drop into this conversion rate conversation, because people might, as we sort of mentioned in the customer lifetime value, people might be challenged by working out these numbers. They might go, oh, you know, well, I don't do events, but I do this. And, you know, how do I work that out? And lots of my customers come back frequently and et cetera, et cetera. There's a simple way to do this. Is number one, if you're using a simple accounting system, go and count the amount of quotes that you produced for individual customers in the last 12 months. And then go and look at those quotes and work out what percentage of those actually turned into jobs. And that's a simple, and then ask yourself, if you've done 100 quotes and 50 of them actually turned into jobs or invoices, think about how in the next 12 months you take 100 quotes and convert 60 of them into jobs. Mm. Where did you fail, or where did you go and look at the 50 that you missed out on and write down the reasons that you missed out on it? And I think a lot of people will become, you know, really kind of aware then of their conversion rate and, you know, places where they can perhaps improve that customer service experience, or, you know, in fact, even before the customer experience kicks in, the customer recruitment experience. Mm. I think it's important if people can just take that as a benchmark and go, I've converted 50 of the 100 quotes that I did last year. How do I improve on that this year? Is there any just off the top of your head? And, you know, obviously we're going to talk about that sort of pitching and things later on, but any sort of immediate things that jump to your head in terms of ways that people could improve that conversion rate?
Having a process is probably, I know it's a very broad answer, but actually walking people through a journey and having some form of, you know, designed experience, as opposed to letting the customer kind of dictate the process. And it's not a matter of controlling per se, it's more leading someone through an experience. It's very broad. I'm not talking specifics, just purely because of time constraints, but having a process, a step-by-step process on, you know, from the minute they inquire through to that base, through to product presentation, through to conversion or trial close, whatever it might be, and however you've defined it, but actually having and designing a process, because people, for most part, they like to be led, especially if they're inquiring or buying something. If you're a business owner that's got a product that people don't buy regularly, you know, like for example, I'm going to use a perfect example. I ordered a ShredX bin today. You're right. Never had a ShredX bin before. Not something you do very often.
No, you need to get out more.
I know. It was the highlight of my day, my fun employed day. So I spoke to this lady on the phone. Great customer experience, great process. You know, and before I knew it, I've got one coming Thursday. You know, in 2 days' time, it'll be, you know, at the front of my house at 10:30 in the morning.
And the interesting thing is you don't even need one.
Probably not. I apparently could have dropped it there, but I'm sure I've ended up with a bin. But not knowing, I tell you what, a common thing that, and I think I even led with this question, I can't remember now, but the common thing people ask when they don't know about it is how much, right?
Like,
how much for a bin? Now, I don't know anything about the bins or the process or the security issues or all the key points that I'm sure are critical to privacy, security. But because she didn't just answer my question and go, well, you know, thanks for your phone call, it's $99. Is there anything else I can help you with? She led me through a process. It was seamless. I got off the phone and that's what I wanted. It was a great customer experience.
Did she say to you the price? Because this is going to be one of my tips for conversion. Did she tell you the price straight away, or did she have the conversation and tell you the price at the end?
I can't remember actually. I think she said it at the end. She qualified a lot. Like, she qualified a lot, which was great.
Okay.
And she got my, I think I mentioned where I lived and where, and she said in relationship to, so straight away she was picking up things that I was saying and was giving me solutions or was able to give me solutions at the end of her qualification phase.
Yeah.
Based on the information that she'd gathered, whether directly or indirectly. But I think the key takeaway here is that there was a very distinct process. I felt safe.
Yeah.
I felt like she was in control, but I was okay with that, which is essential, not control as a manipulative or being pushed,
yeah.
but it was just a safe, simple process, which and I know it's something menial like a like a Shred-X bin, but it's a, I think it's a great example of a you know the effectiveness of having a sales process and to increase that conversion rate.
I was going to give my two tips for increasing conversion rate because I could probably and maybe we will do another masterclass just on converting increasing conversion rates because I think. There's increasing conversion rates when it comes to, you know, getting people into your restaurant or getting them to become a client of yours or manufacturing and all those different types of, there's different ways and there's different channels of how to increase conversion rates. But my two was this. Number one is put the pricing straight away. Don't leave the pricing to the end. And especially if you're going in for a decent length pitch, and I'll explain why, because this was explained to me by someone years ago who used to work at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and they always used to put the pricing for everything they were about to do with the client on page two of the pitch. And the reason that they did that is because then the client has complete and utter awareness of how much this is going to cost whilst they're talking through the features, advantages, and benefits.
Mm.
And they can build that they can build a case after they've told them the price. What they discovered, and you know, some people might think this is right or some people might think this is wrong, but what they discovered and what they believed was that if you tell people the price at the end, there's always a nagging question in their mind as you take them through what it is you're going to sell them.
Hmm.
And as you keep talking about, it's got this advantage, it's got this benefit, it's got this feature, it does this, it does that. What they're doing in the back of their head is going, how much is this going to cost? How much is this going to cost? How much is this going to cost? Whereas if you've already told them, they can actually start to digest the features, advantages, and benefits better than if they're sitting there worrying or not worrying, but focusing on the cost.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, again, I think it's a horses for courses. You've got to do what you're comfortable with. But I think there's definitely an argument to say, put the quote in on page two and then talk through the proposal after that.
Yeah, I think it's transparency and authenticity there.
Yeah.
I think people are wanting that more. It's kind of, it's no doubt the antithesis of what used to be taught back in the sales training days.
Yeah.
But I think it has legs.
Yeah. My second tip, just before we finish, is don't over pitch. And this actually came from an experience about 3 or 4 months ago when someone came into an office for a client that I was working with, and they were there to pitch for one particular job. And that was all that the client wanted them to do. And their focus on that pitch was probably 10% on the job that the client wanted and 90% on other things that they wanted to do for the client. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And after we got past that the first 10%, we'd switched off. We just went, they've answered the question about what they can do for that job. And then we got 90%. We got a lot of conversation about things that we weren't looking for help with.
Yeah.
And I think that becomes an immediate switch off from conversion rate because people are going to go, if I bring them on for that, they're just going to end up selling me and trying to do this and trying to do that. And it's just going to... You know,
and that's fundamentally a qualification issue too. I mean, there's so much wrong with that. It's not funny. I could spend a whole podcast just on that alone.
Yeah.
But yeah, totally. Don't oversell it.
Right. Well, okay. So let's just sum up what we got out of that. So the two things: customer lifetime value, average spend. So what we want you guys to do out there is go and write down, go and work out what first of all, work out what's best for you, average spend, customer lifetime value, et cetera, et cetera. Or some other variant that you're comfortable with. If you can't work out that number yourself, go and find yourself your bookkeeper or your accountant or somebody that knows the numbers better than you do and get a number for yourself. Get one that you're comfortable going, I think people who come into this business are worth this to me. And just have that to the side somewhere, just so you're aware of that number. And the second thing is, let's start talking about your conversion rate. Let's see how well you're doing from inquiry to conversion. There'll always should be, one thing I'll just add in there, there always should be a conversion rate. If you're converting 100% of people, then something's probably wrong. You should always have people that aren't going to be converting, because that would suggest that you're either superhuman or you're not getting enough new inquiries into your business.
Or too cheap.
Or you're too cheap. Absolutely. That's a spot on. So let's work out your conversion rate, and let's think about ways that you can improve that conversion rate as well. Inevitably, both of the things we've discussed today don't actually theoretically require any added investment. Mm. They just require improvements in the way that you pitch or convert, or improvements in the way that you deliver an experience to people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, think about that, because there's a great opportunity for you to make more money here with a minimal, absolutely minimal investment. Any other final comments from you, Simon, on that?
No, I think that's perfect.
Cool. Awesome. That was that's the end of Masterclass number 2. We will be back for the third one very soon. If you've got any questions, either for myself or Simon Bell, whichever one of us you want, you can find us both on social media, LinkedIn. Are you on Twitter? Did I ask you if you're on Twitter?
No, I've got a dying Twitter account paralytic.
But LinkedIn's probably the best
LinkedIn's,
for you.
LinkedIn's okay. Right.
All right. So you can find us both on LinkedIn, or just email the question through to me at simon@simondell.com. We'll see you soon. Thanks very much.